Welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to.
I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them. I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them. I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
Opening stuff to learn when watching these movies. And did you watch both, or did you only watch
No. I watched The Last Crusade and then watched a YouTube synopsis just to kind of refresh my memory of Raiders there.
Smart move. I did not do that, so I'm just going to be arguing against whatever you say.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll hop right into it here, because this week, in honor of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny releasing this past weekend in theaters, we are holding court in an original versus sequel debate between Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade. But before we get to all that, Nick, pressing question that's been on my mind. Is Indiana Jones the American equivalent to James Bond?
I honestly think that is a very good question. And I think the answer is maybe, because I don't know. Like, I can't definitively say yes. I was kind of asking not the same question, but a question along those lines, or thought, whatever, of like how, oh, we're doing this right around 4th of July. This feels like kind of like a very American thing.
Obviously, right,
Indiana Jones was a novel originally. The movies have been around for a long time. Some haven't been so great more of late. But still, like, he kind of does. He's like an American and adventurer, and you know, he kind of translates over time.
But he's
better.
A smart guy, yeah. But he kicks ass, you know, yeah. But he kind of does things his own way, which is the American way.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the Brits are a little bit more buttoned up, a little bit more white collar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? And he's like similar, but different to James Bond in like the right ways for like to represent his nation. And we're like, maybe you could say like, oh, a cowboy could go and represent like America a little bit better. Maybe, but Indiana Jones kind of just, he, as much as the movies have kind of gone in the wrong direction over the last two, we'll say, based on what we're seeing from the returns on the fifth one, that character still has a lot more staying power, I feel like, than like a cowboy necessarily does for representing the country over time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. My only quarrel is it hasn't been, you know, there's been so many people to do James Bond.
Yep.
Which I just think, just as a side note, is thinking about this, is that we always worry about, like, when we recast an actor who's playing a role, they're like, is it going to be, do we have to start everything over again? Is this a whole new universe? Or do we have to do the origin story again? But they never do that with James Bond. It's always just like, updated for the times. Everyone knows who James Bond is at this point. Let's just get on and start telling a great James Bond story. You know, like, I would like to see some of the superhero stories kind of get to that more. And in that same note, like, I would have loved if National Treasure was Indiana Jones just updated for the future, you know, for the 21st century. Like, that's essentially what it was anyway. But like, or even, you know, Uncharted, which I know it's its own IP. But you know, even something like that, those should all just be Indiana Jones.
You know, I think you raised an interesting point with the recasting and how things just kind of move forward. I think in some ways you run into problems because, like, with, you know, like a Steve Rogers or a Tony Stark, you still have all the other same actors and actresses there, so it would be like a little more complicated if you were to just say, hey, Tom Cruise, go take Robert Downey Jr.'s place. That said, there are definitely instances where it feels like you don't need to do that, but the problem is. Now, I can't say I've seen a ton of James Bond movies, but I feel like the flop rate on things like Batman and maybe some other superhero movies prior to like 2008-ish were not like the flop rate was pretty high. So why would you want to be tied to those previous movies if you don't have to be?
Yeah, I guess so. You just end up starting from scratch again. And just, you know, it sucks to have to start back from the beginning. But
and we get the Pearls and Crime Alley all over again.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. That's just my two cents on that here.
It's an interesting thought.
Let's see what's trending now here. It's morphin' time!
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Where are you at with Secret Invasion? Are you up to date with that?
Still haven't watched it. There's been no change, right, in the intro sequence yet?
No, you're not. I'm surprised you. I know this is a 2 week hang, holdover in the conversation. I'm surprised that you're letting an intro, you know, dictate you so much.
Yes. Oh, I'm letting the disrespect for artists dictate me, like, in this instance. So very easy. I am going to watch it for the sake of the show. I absolutely will. But I'm just going to, I'm probably just going to binge it. Maybe I'll cave a little sooner because of time. But right now it's planning to be a binge.
It's pretty good. I don't know. Some people say it's slow. I like it. It's pretty good so far. I like where it's going. So, okay. But that's all I'll say about that then. Let's see what else is in trending now. That was a short topic.
Damn, son. Where'd you find this?
I found this in a theater near you, perhaps. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. That's the theme of this episode here. Opening weekend box office numbers here. So it hauled in $152 million worldwide. That's $82 million on the domestic long extended weekend through July 4th. But just $60 million on the domestic opening weekend there. Received a 6.9 out of 10 on IMDb, a 68-88 split on Rotten Tomatoes with a 3.7 out of 5 on Google reviews, with 82% of Google users liking this movie.
Well, that's interesting.
That's kind of a mixed bag. Kind of a mixed bag there.
That's interesting about the audience score, but we see the critics and IMDb are kind of in lockstep on this one. I'll tell you what, though, Wes, when I heard that number, 152 million worldwide, I was like, okay, that's, that doesn't sound great. And what's the budget on this movie? The highest production budget for an Indiana Jones movie so far is Indiana Jones 5.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Between 250 and 300 million.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good there. I was also seeing another promotion, not a buy, I forget what it was. It's not a buy one, get one, but it was something like that as well for Fandango in relation to Indiana Jones.
Yes, yes. I don't remember what it was exactly, but I just can't help but wonder, is it like, see, I want to say, oh, are people having trouble getting to the theaters? Like, they just having trouble getting inspired, but then it's like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse obviously crushed it. Mario crushed it. Maybe it's just adults are having, like, aren't as
Guardians, yeah.
Mm, Guardians, there you go. That's a fair counterpoint to the whole adults thing. But yeah, I just don't know if it's more kids that are, like, I know kids generally are the ones that are going to drive stuff to the theaters, but is it even more so of late?
Yeah, and we'll see, right? Because I think in the next couple weeks we have Barbie and Oppenheimer, and then Mission Impossible. I forget which one. I think it's 7 at this point that we're on. But yeah. So those should be a couple of blockbusters. Definitely 2 of the 3. We'll see how Oppenheimer does. But I would imagine the people will come out for Barbie. They're marketing that like crazy. Mm-hmm. The same thing for Mission Impossible. But I'm excited to, I'm eager to see what happens with Oppenheimer. See if people show up for that.
Yeah, I'm not as excited for the Mission Impossible, but I
love those movies. Action for the sake of action.
I know you do. And you like Tom Cruise a lot too, right?
Yeah, but he does all of his own stunts. You got to respect that.
I do respect that. I actually saw a clip of like him talking about, I think in this Mission Impossible where he's like hanging from the side of the plane, like how they did that stunt. It's wild. It's just like, how many Mission Impossibles can you do before like they're actually like, you know what? They're highly improbable.
Yeah.
Missions more like there's better title, but I'm excited for Oppenheimer.
It's always possible with Ethan Hunt.
I guess so. I'm very, I'm excited for Barbie. I'm very excited for Oppenheimer because you got Nolan and Cillian Murphy. And I freaking love Cillian Murphy. He's amazing.
Now, yeah. And on the Indiana Jones front, just to get back there, I feel like we buried the lead there a little bit. But good conversation on the box office overall. But yeah, it's not going to get me to go out and see it. I feel like the reviews are still kind of on the negative side if I'm looking at things as a whole. But I'm definitely going to check this out when it comes to, I don't know, I guess it would be Disney Plus, right?
Yeah. And the thing too, that I think we're just seeing more and more is as much as, you know, we've moved past that phase of, was it the theatrical release and a streaming release at the same time? Obviously, that was because of the pandemic and things. It was different times and everything like that. I think we look at it now, what's going on when we see this not do well, and if we start seeing more movies struggle like this, when people are just like, I'm just going to wait till it comes on streaming, they're losing a lot. I would think they're losing a lot of money on that because now you just don't have to pay for it. I'm in a similar boat to you. I will see this when it comes to streaming, but I'm not going to pay for it.
Yeah, and I'm still like, he's like 80 years old at this point, Harrison Ford. You know, like, I love the guy, don't get me wrong, you know, get off my plane, all that stuff, right? But it's just kind of got to be torture at this point. It's like what Robert De Niro and The Irishman, like when he's trying to curb stomp that guy, it's just kind of painful to watch. So
yeah, I don't know.
I also kind of want to see it from that aspect, see if they can pull it off.
Yeah, I am interested in how that pans out. I mean, in Captain America, I'm sure he'll be fine, but it's a different role, and obviously there's the CGI monsters, all that stuff won't be an issue.
Yeah, exactly. Totally different. He feels like he has to be a little bit more present for Indiana Jones here.
Of course.
Last thing in trending now.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this all over the internet, Nick. Dune 2. Tune, as some people might call it. Its second trailer released last week. It comes out to theaters November 3rd. Very interesting trailer. You just watched it. Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, and Javier Bardem. Who else am I missing there? We got Christopher Walken. We got Josh Brolin there. The cast, it's a huge who's who cast. One of the Skarsgårds. Austin, the guy who played Elvis is in there, you know, everybody's in there. So
yeah,
looks really cool. And after the first one, which was a little bit of a buildup, you know, maybe the Fellowship of the Ring to the Two Towers, if we're doing a comparison here, hopefully this Dune 2 is the Two Towers payoff where you get a lot more action and a lot more things to kind of carry you through, where the first one was just kind of world building and setting everything up.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first one, but this is the second trailer. So the first trailer for the second movie was promising, but this was like, holy shit, man.
Yeah.
To the point where I just had to ask you, and we don't know because we're not like on the up and up when it comes to
Dune
by
and large.
Right. But I'm totally fine with that. I don't need
our heads are in the sand, perhaps, when it comes to Dune.
Wow, bravo. That's the end of the podcast right there. I think we have to go on a high note. But yeah, I don't know if this is like the conclusion of like this saga, as you put it when we were talking before, or if there's like a third movie, or this will be the end, and then we'll get like a Dune Volume 2, Episode 1, like for the next movie. Like that's kind of what I'm hoping for based on what we saw in this trailer. But it seems like the action's going to be even more elevated in this movie than it was in the first one. There was some good stuff in that first one.
Yeah, and what I imagine, maybe this is what they do here, it's that it's sold as a trilogy where you get the first one kind of carries into the second one, and then the third one's going to be split up into part one to part two to maximize their marketing dollars.
That would make sense.
It's a three-part story in total, you know, but you get four movies.
Yeah.
So I could see that. And if they're all about 3 hours, which is what I think I remember with Dune being, it was a pretty long slog of a movie. That looks really good. I hope it's not a slog. The movie looks great.
Yeah.
Visually, and they cut a really, you know, I just hope they're not cutting all the action parts into the trailer. You know what I mean? Like,
and
trailers have a way with these quick cuts to make these long, dramatic, maybe slogs of conversations look really interesting. But when they actually play out, you know, on the big screen, you're like, this doesn't really hit the same way.
Yeah. This is the thing with trailers. Like, you just like, again, I know we do it for the shows all the time, but if we didn't do the show, I'd probably watch one trailer and then be like, okay, I'm going to see it. I'm not going to see it in theaters. I want to see it right away, whatever. You have an idea. And then you don't need to know much more outside of that, because then that way, then we start kind of spoiling stuff or pulling, like giving just too much information. But I, after watching this one, like I'm not too worried about that. I'm just worried when, like, I guess I've been wondering, like, are we going to get full resolution or not? And I mean, that's part of the ride. So I guess I kind of got to let that go. But yeah, like, it seems like there's a lot going on with House Harkonnen in this one. I know there are obviously the key players in this, but you mentioned Skarsgård, Batista. And then there's another character who it seems like it's a flashbacky kind of thing with that character. I don't know if that's Dave Batista when he's younger with the dude with the knives, but it was
very
that's
cool. That's Elvis. That's the Elvis character. That's the Austin. I forget his name, but that's him. Yeah.
Okay. He looks
like Prometheus almost. Yeah.
Yeah. That was very promising. Those clips.
Yeah. Yeah. So all good stuff there. Real quick, do you miss the days of like when you go to a movie and then you see a trailer that you haven't seen? You're like, oh my God, I can't wait for that to come out.
I feel like that's happened to me sometimes. Like I did. Like where I haven't seen the trailer at all.
Yeah. Yeah. When you go to the movie and then you see a trailer for the first time, you're like, oh my God, we don't get that. You know, everything comes out online and it all has its viral moment. I miss that part where like you want to get to the movie theater early to see the trailer. I used to like, that was like five or six years ago. Like my wife used to like make fun of me for that. And now I'm coming in 20 minutes after the start time to avoid all of those.
Yeah, those were really cool. Like that was definitely really cool, like growing up where we didn't have it so easily accessible. Now, I will say when I started seeing the same trailers over and over, if I went like back-to-back weekends or like maybe even sometimes I feel like you could even like in the course of like a 6-week span, you could still get all the same trailers. And I'm like, hey, why don't we have anything new at this point? Like what, like let's get some new stuff in here. But I still feel like there's usually one when I go to theaters that I just, a trailer that I haven't seen. I don't know if it gets me excited or maybe something not for me, but I feel like I still see that once in a while. I hear you. It's definitely not the same.
Yeah. This is just the old man yelling at the sky, you know?
Yeah, I don't know about that. It's Morphin time.
A superb choice.
All right. So we got from Image this week, we got No One, issue 4, written by Kyle Higgins. I've been raving about this series. It also has a podcast that accompanies it too. So it's a podcast that is set within the pages of the world. It's really cool. Patton Oswalt is one of the voice actors on that. Then we have Boom. We got Grimm issue 1, the start of a new story over there. That's been an outstanding series. And then the big story I think of the week is from DC. We got the Night Terrors event that's starting this week. Just a quick synopsis on what that is. A mysterious and deadly new villain named Insomnia has struck. The entire world has been forced into eternal slumber, including all the heroes and villains, as Insomnia searches their dreams for their nightmare, for the Nightmare Stone. I've read, I think, 4 of the issues so far from this week. Solid. It's not this crazy mind-blowing thing necessarily so far. If you're going to read one, just to kind of set the table for you, Night Terror's First Blood is the one, because that kind of like leads you into, oh, what the hell happened? How did we get here? But then there's a few different titles out from that this week. So kind of like pick your favorite character from that, and I think you'll end up being okay. There's some other ones that are more like mainline event issues that are going to be coming out over the next few weeks into August. But we'll keep you up to date on all that on TLDR. Just what's new this week because of the holiday. We want to keep it nice and short for you guys.
All right. Nice and short and sweet. I love it. It's Morphin time. Let's get over to our main topic. All right. And of course, that is the official theme music of our CMM debate theme that we do here. So essentially, for those of you who don't remember the rules, we are going to be debating Raiders of the Lost Ark for Nick and The Last Crusade for myself. So I will have 1 minute to present an argument. We'll both have opening statements, of course, but we'll then have 1 minute to present an argument and then 30 seconds to retort. We'll go back and forth and then end things with a closing argument. And then if I have enough brain cells to remember this, I will even put out a poll to see, ask you, the people, who won at home, or here, ask you at home who won.
Because what's supposed to be on the line is who reads the synopsis versus who reads the cast and crew for whenever we do our reviews, our exit surveys, excuse me.
Yeah, and I've just been losing in multiple ways, just in the debates and then just by not even putting out the poll to help myself. So
how do you even know if you're losing? You're just not giving yourself a chance.
That's true. That's true here. So we'll have 60 seconds to do all of that, and then we have some good debate questions here. But before that, let's hit the tail of the tape. Why don't you tell me about Raiders of the Lost Ark, Nick?
It all started in 1981. Raiders of the Lost Ark. The synopsis for this hit film. In 1936, archaeologist and adventurer Indiana Jones is hired by the U.S. government to find the Ark of the Covenant before Nazis can obtain its awesome power. At the box office, this hauled in $389 million worldwide, including $249 million domestic. And then it got $8 million domestic in its opening weekend on just an $18 million budget.
Wow. Woo!
And that's not adjusted for inflation. Then we got the critics' reception. This is an 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb, a 93-96 split on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 6.9, this is surprising, out of 5 on Google reviews who continue to elude us.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. I thought that was very, very weird here. But nevertheless, The Last Crusade came out in 1989. This was the third installment. We're skipping over the Temple of Doom because I think most people do, although there's a pretty iconic scene of pulling a heart out of a man's chest there. But nevertheless, synopsis. In 1938, after his father goes missing while pursuing the Holy Grail, Indiana Jones finds himself up against the Nazis once again to stop them from obtaining its powers. This movie made $474 million worldwide, including $197 million domestic, $29 million on its domestic opening, on a $48 million budget. So a little bit higher budget, but still made a whole lot of profit. This made a got an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb, as well as a 84-94 split on Rotten Tomatoes, with a 4.6 out of 5 on Google reviews. So very, very well received.
I'm surprised that this got... Now, again, I did not rewatch The Last Crusade. I rewatched the movie that I'm representing today. From what I remember with Last Crusade, I was like, this... Like, Temple of Doom, we don't need to say much more than everybody knows that these are the two best Indiana Jones movies. This is where the conversation lies. But I was kind of surprised that the critics gave this such a lower grading on Rotten Tomatoes versus what the original got. I mean, it's just because it feels too derivative. I don't know. But it's like, it's still really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, 84 is no slouch, you know, I think.
Then you haven't got a 93, though. I mean, I just don't
get it. Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, yeah, that probably has some, you know, kind of breaking the mold type of thing with Raiders.
I hear you. If you give something a 93 and I give it an 84 when we're doing our reviews, we're not in the same neighborhood. We're not even in the same town. So it's, to me, it's like, whoa.
Different tax brackets, that's for sure.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, well, you're living the upscale life. You know, I'm slumming it.
That's a good one. Okay. Well, since that's the case, I would like to extend the offer to you to lead us off with the opening arguments.
Yes. Yes, I will. You got 60 seconds on the clock here.
Right. When you are actually, I'll give you the countdown. Sorry. 3, 2, 1, begin.
The Last Crusade. This is a great, great story. Not only do you get a little bit of a beginning, a little bit of a primer of who Indiana Jones is, played by the young heartthrob River Phoenix, God rest his soul. And then you also get the great father-son relationship there with Sean Connery. So you get a blending of generations all throughout there while still getting your classic Indiana Jones story. You have him as the professor. You have him as the adventurer. You have him as the womanizer. He's punching Nazis. He's robbing graves, or not graves so much, but historical sites, and then putting them in museums where they belong. This is classic Indiana Jones getting right back on the track. Not to say that Raiders of the Ark isn't. That's a great movie in its own right, but it's doing a little bit more. It's building upon what Raiders of the Lost Ark already established.
Time. Nice job. I got to make sure I have the sounder up for this one, though, because I forgot that was a thing that we do now here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's see if that still works on your end. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. That is. Oh, all right. We're good. Okay. So my opening argument.
All right. Starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
It all began here. Wes can talk about how, you know, you get a little primer to Indiana Jones in his movie, but at the same time, mine is where it all starts. And you want to talk about a primer, you see the first event of Indiana Jones as we know him, where he's hunting down this ancient relic. And from there, nonstop action, trust, distrust, deception, and amazing action throughout. And that's just in the first like 15, 10 minutes of the movie. We get an amazing artifact that we're going after, one that I still don't even think that people touch on a whole heck of a lot, at least in cinema and everything, or shows, which I found very fascinating upon rewatching this. We get a strong female character opposite of him, despite some of the dodginess that's involved with those two. We get an amazing supporting cast that we'll talk about a little bit later on. And all around, this is what started it all to help set the tone for this amazing franchise. You were on mute, so I didn't hear any of your countdowns.
I'm still Yeah, there sorry. I was blowing my nose. I'm a little I'm fighting off the remnants of a cold. I've been sick for the last like week or so.
Oh, that's
yeah, funny. from last Tuesday. Yeah, a neither cold here nor allergies? There. I know, you know, I think it was coming back from the airport, traveling, and then like I was just kind of on the go the rest of the weekend there. So I think burning the candle at both ends, you know.
That will do it, yeah.
But you don't get sick days as a parent, so you know, I've just been chomping down DayQuil, and it's all good.
No days off.
Hashtag no days off. Ain't that the truth?
Mm-hmm. All right. Am I leading off then for the
Yes. Yeah. Let's do that then. Yeah. So we'll have this makes sense. Which movie has the better MacGuffin, the Ark of the Covenant or the Holy Grail? So let me reset my clock. You get 60 seconds on why the Ark of the Covenant is the better MacGuffin. 3, 2, 1, go.
As I mentioned in my opening argument, this is an artifact that I've heard very little about. And I do find, like, you know, history interesting. I do find religious history interesting. And we learn a little bit about this in the course of it all. And it's a wild artifact. And then to see what it turns out to be in the end is absolutely friggin' mind-blowing, the power that this thing possesses. And what's so cool about it, too, is where we see some other stuff with Indiana Jones in his career, this is the tone setter for him, because he's someone who's like, yeah, I don't believe in all that mumbo jumbo, all that, you know, magic, whatever you want to call it, higher powers. Like he makes a joke about it at the beginning, like his revolver is 15. Like his higher power or whatever it is. And he experiences the arc, and at the, what we get at the end is still like that. Still, like, I vividly remember that moment. I think anybody who's seen this movie remembers it to this day.
All right.
You have 30 seconds on the clock to
rebuttal. Yeah, hit me. Hit me with it. Yep.
3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah. See, I'm with you, Nick. I love history. I love religious history. I love religious lore as well. So things that may be history adjacent or maybe bending of that. So I'm with you on that. But it does seem a little bit weird that essentially a casket could wield so much power and have so much to do, you know, so much supernatural power. It seems big, a little bit clunky. It just doesn't line up fully right for me. You know, I need a little bit of work on the Ark of the Covenant and its powers. Okay.
That's all me.
Right. All right. You're going to lose your privileges.
All right. I couldn't help it. You have 60 seconds on the clock, sir, to explain why the Holy Grail in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is the better MacGuffin of the two. 3, 2, 1, go.
Well, like I just mentioned in my previous statement there, you know, I'm a lover of history. I'm a lover of Catholicism, of religious history, and also religious lore. So let's get that out of the way. But what greater search through history has there been by man than the Fountain of Youth in some way, shape, or form? It's the ultimate quest by man. The cup of life used by Jesus at the Last Supper and by Joseph to catch Jesus's blood at the crucifixion and is now guarded by the Fisher King. How cool is that? We even get to see him a little bit, you know, in the Last Crusade. While the Ark of the Covenant is really just, you know, the home of the Ten Commandment tablets. You know, you got the rod of Moses's brother. Like, it's all like, yeah, it's cool. And they need a lot of special effects to kind of church it up, which is what I was alluding to in my previous argument. But the Cup of Life has so much symbolism, and it's portable. One, you know, you can carry it around with you. You don't need five guys to lift it up and raise it. So
just the one. Sorry.
The Holy Grail. That's it.
Okay. You can hear me, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, okay. I got you.
Okay, good. All right. Lay on me.
30 seconds. 3, 2, 1, go.
Look, the Holy Grail was a safe move. After Temple of Doom, they needed to play it safe. They needed to go with a familiar item. They needed to play it up. Oh, we'll do Fountain of Youth. This is a thing that's been overplayed forever. Of course, it was still interesting. This was a good movie. But at the same time, you go 15. And use that after Temple of Doom, where you had trouble. And then in the first movie, you had this amazing arc, this whole thing, this like amazing, ridiculous weapon. And now we have to go and use it that we've never really heard about. And now we have to use the Holy Grail. Come on in there. Look at that.
Yeah, you had a couple seconds. You had a couple seconds in there.
All right. So moving on to number two.
Yes. Yeah, so now this is me.
This is you. Here.
Which movie? I don't mean to step on your toes. Set it up.
Okay. Which movie boasts the better female lead?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
60 seconds on the clock, Wesley. 3, 2, 1, go.
This role, Elsa Schneider, played by Allison Duty. She is an Austrian-German Nazi sympathizer, but she's actually an Irish actress in this. So very tall, leggy blonde, with steely looks. She's got a little bit of a danger, fear factor to her, where she's working with the Nazis, which adds a little bit of a sex appeal. She was a Bond girl previously. I think that means something. She also was Charlie Sheen's girlfriend in Major League 2. I think that also means something. So she has this longevity. She actually also just appeared in RRR. So the things that I would do, I feel like Elsa Schneider would get me to do a lot of things. You know what I mean? And I feel like she's a very adept spy. You can't fall in love with something like that, but you can have a great Indiana Jones one night stand, James Bond one night stand. And I think that happens.
Look at that. Perfect timing. Okay.
There we go. 30 seconds on your retort starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Elsa Schneider is a villain. She is she's a Nazi sympathizer. She's the worst of them all. Now, in the end, she kind of doesn't care about them and kind of wants her own thing, and that's all she cares about, wants to run away with Indy. So, she's not completely irredeemable, I guess, but at the same time, she's still a huge a-hole. I would like to see this actress have played in some other spy roles. I'm curious about, talking about James Bond, I'm curious what that was, but she's just a bad guy. She's not a bad guy.
Well, it's in Curb Your Enthusiasm, where they go to the chicken store, or the chicken store opens, the Palestinian chicken store, and it's right up next to the kosher deli. And Larry falls in love with the Palestinian, or lust after the Palestinian chicken owner, and they have very hot, ruckus, racist sex. And it's sometimes, the heart wants what it hates. There's a thin line between love and hate. Sometimes those lines can be blurred to create beautiful passion.
Okay.
And that's just all I'm willing to explore there,
Okay.
We can all just succumb to the wants and desires of the flesh.
That is true. And she is obviously a very attractive woman.
She's a tall drink of water, as they might say.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So 60 seconds on the clock while your female lead is sexier. And 3, 2, 1, go.
I am taking the route of she is just the better all around lead, because obviously there is a whole weird background with Marion and Indiana Jones that I was not aware of until rewatch. I know they remember they were younger when they had their original relationship, but holy shit. But simple reason on this one. They bring her back later. When you go, it's all said and done. You bring Marion back for another story. Obviously, she worked. And she, where as much as Elsa Schneider is manipulative and everything like that, and obviously attractive. First of all, Marion obviously is an attractive actress. But at the same time, she's a tough MF-er. She doesn't take shit from anybody. Now, it doesn't mean she doesn't get captured every once in a while. But she does not put up with Indiana Jones shit. And I really enjoyed how, From start to finish, 15. She is very unforgiving with him. We do have the softer moments and everything like that, but at the same time, it is not the standard lead male lead female relationship you see on. Oh, I couldn't get that out. Oh,
you got there though. You landed it.
Jeez, yes. Okay. Anyways, you have 30 seconds on the clock, sir, to go against Maid Marian. 3, 2, 1.
No question. Very attractive young lady that's in Raiders of the Lost Ark there. She was also the female Nick and I were discussing. Was one of the female leads in Animal House, too. So she has this kind of college girl next door type of look, which works out very well, especially coupled with the kind of rough around the edges that she can do there as well. But in comparison, it's not. You got a supermodel or the girl next door. Who are you choosing? Live life on the wild side. Live dangerously.
Sorry, that second was unintentional. That was unintentional.
You're skating on thin ice. You're living dangerously.
This is how fights start. Shit. You dick around for 1 second and then you
keep both hands. That's what my dad used to say when we used to like mess with him and try to pull the door open while he's unlocking it, you know, in the car door. He's like, put both hands where I could see them.
I was really curious where you were going with that one to the end because you waited for like the last 5 seconds to like make your point.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, where? I'm just giving too many compliments here.
Exactly.
Forgetting the argument.
Okay. What do we have next, Wes?
Which movie features the best action sequence here? So a bunch of different options you can choose from, I'm sure. Nick, you're going first with Raiders of the Lost Ark. 60 seconds on the clock starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
This was a tough one for me at first because you have the whole like marketplace scene. That's a lot of fun. You have the iconic moment where Indy is going against that dude with the sword. He does the little thing and then he just pulls his gun out and like, what am I wasting my time for? Mm-hmm. But I think the best scene has to go to in Raiders of the Lost Ark has to go to when Indy's fighting the shirtless Nazi, the moose of a man. And this whole time, you know, Marion's like shooting down people with the machine gun from the plane after she knocked out the pilot. And then Indy is like trying to fight this guy and he gets some good licks in for sure. He gets a nosebleed out of the guy, but he never really wobbles. But then by the end of it all, and the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, I can't believe Harrison Ford recorded some of this. Did he? Like, is this an actual plane? I had like serious anxiety watching it. And then because I know we all know what happens at the end where Indy only wins the fight by using his brains. And then in the end, that guy, the big Nazi, bites the dust. And oh,
that's a good place to stop right there.
I lucked out.
That was good. That was good.
All right. Do you want to do 30 seconds against this or
no? I think we can just do a minute right into it here. I think that's a good call. Just kind of present our own positions here.
Yeah. I'm not going to. Yeah. Perfect. Cause I don't think I have a debate on yours. All right. I'm curious where you end up going with yours, but without further ado, 60 seconds on the clock, Wes. 3, 2, 1.
Well, like Nick mentioned, there's a couple of different places I could have gone here, just like you could have in Raiders of the Lost Ark. But the one that jumps out to me the most is escaping the church library that leads into a boat chase in Venice by the order of the cruciform sword. So that's when he's with Elsa for the first time and they're going down. They discover X marks the spot. They find the original grave of King Richard. The order lights this cave on fire and all these rats come up, and that'll come up a little bit later. But then they get out, then they're chased along the Venice canals there by, again, this same order. And you get this great boat chase. You get on land and in sea, both there doing great stuff. You get the Order of the Cruciform Sword, which is there to protect the Holy Grail. So a nice little secret agency there. And then just a little bit of a hat tip, an homage to Raiders of the Lost Ark. They get rid of the bad guys by using one of the propellers of a big oil tanker, a la Raiders of the Lost Ark, which Nick just mentioned. But they do it better because it's in water.
Okay, look at that.
It's water, yeah. Very, water. Very cool stuff, actually. So that was a nice little callback.
Yeah, look at that. Look at us.
Look at us. Who would have thought? Which movie features the sequence that best represents Indiana Jones?
Okay, yep. I was looking at the wrong one there. Okay, yep. You're first on this one.
Yes, I am.
All right, 60 seconds on the clock, sir. 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, so this scene could have also been with the best action sequence, in my opinion. It's the opening sequence from The Last Crusade. You get a young Indiana Jones, played by River Phoenix, rest in peace, stealing the Coronado crucifix from the robbers while on a Boy Scout trip in Utah. So this is like early 1900s, like 1918, like when the Red Sox won the World Series type of stuff. He's running on trains. He's riding horses. He's taming lions, learning how to use a whip for the first time. He's falling into a bed of snakes, which is the reason why he hates snakes. You find out that he gets the hat because he actually models a lot of his fashion game after the robber who we try to steal it from. So there's a lot of you find a lot of the impetus of Indiana Jones as birth right in that moment right there. And I think that encapsulates everything that happens from that there forward, going from Raiders of the Lost Ark all the way up to Dials of the Destiny.
Well done, sir. You actually had a second to spare before I pressed that button. But
felt pretty good about that. Yeah. Nice and succinct.
Yeah. It's interesting because I don't know if I want to do I don't want to like continue to forego my counter argument here, but I don't feel like
I think it's fair. We'll do 60 seconds. Yeah. Yeah. This is a holiday episode anyway. We're just having some fun here today.
This is true. This is true. But I mean, this is also, there's something on the line here. I don't want to have to read,
potentially, maybe not. I don't know. Who knows?
This is true. All right. I'll take my 60 seconds alone then.
Okay. 60 seconds on the clock starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
It's funny because just like Wes cites the opening sequence of Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, I also feel like the first scene, the first sequence that we get of Indiana Jones in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, it very much represents like all of Indy. You see his smarts, you see him trust people that maybe shouldn't be trusted, and you see what happens to those people when they try and screw him over. And it's great foreshadowing for what's going to happen later. Obviously, we meet Belloc in the beginning, but that first scene of Indiana Jones, or the first sequence where he's in that tomb,
25 seconds,
and especially when you see him running from the rock, but running from the rock is like. That's Indiana Jones to a T. When you think of Indiana Jones, that's one of the five things you probably think of. That and him making the switch with the golden idol too. I mean, I think even when we talk about like Guardians of the Galaxy or Chris Pratt's picking the orb up, like it's similar kind of thing. So to me, that's peak Indiana Jones right there.
Ooh, marks that one right there with a burp. Wow.
That was not a... That's right. We only have fart noises for our.
That's true. This was a practical effect.
Yes. Look at that. Wow. Where
they in honor of Spielberg and George Lucas. Yeah.
There you go.
All that good stuff. Yeah. Which movie? Okay. So this goes to you here. 60 seconds. And we'll just do the 1 minute thing. We don't have to go back and forth on this. Or do you want to? You got? Yeah.
I feel like with yours, I may want to debate it. Yeah. Going into it.
Okay. All right here. Okay. So let's, 60 seconds on the clock on who has the scariest scenario for Indy to get out. I believe that's you, Nick, right?
Yes. It's my turn. Yep.
All right. It starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
So you basically, what you're telling me is that you have this thing like Wes talked about before, right? With his MacGuffin, with the cup and everything. And he'll get to his whole point, but this is a known thing. Everybody kind of knows what you're getting into with this. The Ark of the Covenant, no clue what the hell's going to happen with this thing. You know, it's supposed to, you'll provide a measurable power and everything like that. But what we end up seeing is, I mean, not meant for mortal eyes. It's very clear. And it's true. How, 30 seconds. As I'm watching this, it's like, well, how the hell did Indy figure that out? Like, is it just intuition that maybe, hey, this isn't the best move? I don't know. And some could argue like, okay, that's like he kind of just guessed his way out of it. But that makes it all the more scary because you have no frigging clue. And I'll get to my counterpoints and why I want to debate Wes's. But 10. This is just like gut instinct. And sometimes you do well and sometimes you bite the dust. And holy shit, Indy got lucky.
Well, that was a little early there. I didn't mean to. I was quick on the draw. But
it was perfect.
You're all set? Okay.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Do you want your 30 seconds?
Yeah. I'll take the 30 seconds.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
So that's certainly a scary moment there, right? You're seeing like the whole face kind of like age and everything like that. Very, very scary stuff. And like throughout the light and the flames, like you don't really know what's going on. I would have thought like maybe one of Indiana's sidekick has tarantulas going all up and down his back. Like I would have thought like that would be a moment. We maybe interpreted this question a little differently because I was thinking like something that I would be in that I would not want to have to do here. So that kind of leads into my 60 seconds.
Okay. All right.
Which we can just get right into. Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go.
No.
Oh, yeah, see, I thought it started you. One go. Oh,
no. No,
wait,
wait, wait, wait, oh, no, 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 no. I haven't started yet. I don't always say go. Sorry. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. Thank you. I need to go. Otherwise, I don't know. I'm just waiting in the, yeah.
Wasting
anyway,
more time.
Still wasting time. But nevertheless, the situation that I wouldn't want to be in is what I was alluding to in the movie that features the best action sequence question. So when they're going through the church and the library and the underground caves there, the order guys light the cave on fire. and Indiana Jones with Elsa have to spill over a top of a boat to create an air bubble where they can breathe and kind of buy themselves some more time. But while that is happening, that all the rats, which are like any place that's not covered with water or wet, come rushing into this boat capsule, that capsized boat. Okay. And I would not be able to do that. Would not be able to walk on the walls there with have them crawling all over me. And then again, in a mad dash, try to save their life. They are just crawling into you. That would freak me out. I wouldn't be able to think or come up with a plan or comprehend anything.
Look at that. Show off. Wasted 5 seconds off the top and still got it in.
Still got it in. Okay. 30 seconds to retort starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah, so we clearly took different routes here. Just as comparison, the thing that in my movie that's kind of on the same level as Wes's whole rat situation, yes, the boat's scary, but at the same time, Indy gets lowered into a tomb filled with snakes. Like, and it's just... Yeah. As much as he deals with something like that when he was a kid, and that's what scarred him for life, this is like you're in a foreign country. You have no idea what the hell's going on. You're just trusting a couple of torches. And also, you got to get in and out of there as fast as possible. And then what happens? He doesn't get in and out of there as fast as possible. Yeah. He almost bites the dust. Brutal.
Yeah, what is crazy about that scene in Raiders is they Spielberg demanded, like, 8,000 to 10,000 live snakes on set because the fake ones didn't look enough. And then they couldn't keep enough anti-venom on set for everyone involved to keep everyone safe. So there was like a huge, like, human animal rights, like issue that was going on there for a little bit too. So very interesting stuff. Yeah.
That's insane.
And I would be very pissed if I was an actor and they're like, no, like you sign on thinking it's going to be, fake snakes that you're dealing with, and it's like, no, actually, we don't like the look of them. We're gonna get real snakes, real cobras.
I'm gonna pass on that. Thanks, all the same. No way. That's wild. No way. Asps and cobras.
Yeah. No. Thank you. So yeah, I agree. That's a scary scene.
All right. That brings us to our final point.
Which is which movie has the better performance from a supporting cast? I believe I'm the first in line here.
Am I? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Sorry. Yes.
Am I? Yeah.
Yes. All right. So, which movie had a better performance from the supporting cast? Wes begins with The Last Crusade. 3, 2, 1, go.
Well, we've already talked about the beautiful Allison Duty, who is a tall drink of water. No need to talk about her anymore. She's a Nazi sympathizer, but she's really just looking out for herself here. So that's important to know. She's just trying to survive in enemy territory. So I want that to be said. But we also get River Phoenix playing as a young Indy who looked very charismatic. In fact, I thought he was like Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, like he you always hear that he had a high upward trajectory, but seeing him be young Indiana Jones, and this does an amazing job of it, actually. Completely conveys all the best qualities of Indiana Jones that we come to know and love. And last but certainly not least, we have Sean Connery, who, again, brings his like typical Coxman style. He has a British accent for some reason, Scottish accent for some reason, but he's just doing it anyway. But he's blumbering, but he's helpful. There's the father-son dynamic works out great. They kind of get to hash out some shit, but still have some great memories and some stuff, too. Some stuff. Yeah, it's good. Shit.
I'm just going to do my own.
Yes.
You can still keep your 30 if you want.
No, no. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't get a leg up on you like that.
Well, okay. All right. 60 seconds, please, sir.
I do declare 60 seconds on the clock in 3, 2, 1, go.
So we already talked about Marion and what she provides on screen. Obviously, in her whole intro, too, I didn't talk about that before, but that dive bar in Nepal where she's having that drinking contest, like it's basically like Gimli and Legolas, and you know, she goes and ends up beating the heavy favorite in it, which was great. But then we have Belloc, who is the opposite of Indiana Jones here. It's like, everything you can have, I can take away from you. We once again prove it over and over again. He is a real, real friggin' bastard. Paul Freeman did a great job there. A guy who's quickly in this movie, but hops out fast is Alfred Molina's Satipo, who was a real, you know, bastard too. Again, someone who's gone pretty quickly because he didn't do it right by Indy. We have John Rhys Davies playing Sala, which I'm sure that casting would be a little bit problematic 15. In these days, but still he was interesting. He was a good buddy to Indy throughout all of it too. And then also Major Arnold Taut, played by Ronald Lacey. That's the Nazi who originally visited Marion. He's a real freaking weirdo.
Okay. All right. We'll get there. We got there. So that's the argument. That's what lays out. We still got 60 seconds on the clock for our closing arguments here.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, you want to set me up with that? And I'll close,
yes, sir,
things out for us.
All right. 60 seconds on the clock, sir. 3, 2, 1, begin.
Listen, I'm not here to besmirch the name of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's a fine movie. I think everybody should go rent it and go watch it. And then immediately go watch Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, because it is such a good movie. It carries on. Not only does it carry on what a great story that's told in Raiders, but it builds it. It builds the lore into greater stratosphere that we didn't think was possible. He's killing Nazis once again. He's making love with Nazis once again. You know, he's doing all this stuff. And you get the father-son element. You get the little beginning there that tells his backstory, his origin story. And it's a little bit older. So if you're one of those people who aren't a big fan of poor or older CGI special effects, this newer movie might be more up your alley than the older version of Raiders. And that's it. I see my time.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
I feel good. I'm confident.
Stinky.
Oh, wait. Who did that? Oh, so sorry.
Okay. All right. Damn it, Nick. This is the last. Don't make me come back then.
All right.
60 seconds on the clock. Closing arguments. Raiders. 3, 2, 1. Go.
The argument that they did it first, so it's always the best, is not fair. And I feel like I just made up that point and maybe butchered the saying. Mm-hmm. But either way, we get a character, we get a pairing in Marion Indiana Jones that we end up seeing returning when this franchise comes back years later. So obviously they did something right there. When you look at what happened in the second Indiana Jones movie, why they had to come back and do Wes's movie, because they needed to recapture what they did in the first movie, because that had the recipe for success. You have a superior villain in Belloc, probably the best villain in all of the Indiana Jones movies. And then you get some, the introduction of Indiana.
20 seconds left.
Where we learn about Indiana and his whole, I believe in these historical facts, but I don't believe in the magic surrounding them. The experience there, it sets an amazing 10. Tone for this character over the course of 5 movies now. Done.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. So that, there you have it, people. We're going to let the people decide. The court has rested their arguments. The defense and the prosecution both rest. Now we're asking you, the jury, to go deliberate for a little bit of time. Maybe we put a poll out. Maybe we won't. That's a secret that we won't be sharing until you know it. So let's go follow our Twitter at what is it, at CMM podcast. What's our Twitter handle these days? CMM_podcast.
CMM_podcast.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah. That's what it is. To go cast your vote and get your voice heard on who won the debate, Raiders of the Lost Ark with Nick or myself with The Last Crusade. Whoa, no.
There you go.
Now, there we go.
Choo choo bitches.
Nick, we are obsessed with Immaculate Grid.
Yes.
Give me
we
all
are.
Things Immaculate Grid. That's my discharge depot. It's been consuming my life. The baseball seems to be the one that's the most tried and true. You get a little bit of statistics, it's a little bit more involved. You can share things on Twitter. Very interesting stuff. I love it. The NFL, which seems brand new, and the NBA, which also seems new, are the Suboxone to my fentanyl, if you will. Just something that just kind of gives me a little bit of taste and helps me carry over to my next big hit when I'm ready to take my shit in the morning, which is how I usually do my Immaculate Grids. But for those who may not be familiar, Nick, tell the people at home what it is. You're a baseball guy.
So the immaculate inning is when someone, when a pitcher strikes out nine batters, obviously on nine pitches, one, two, three, mm-hmm. in and out. So what has been created was like Wordle, same kind of like layout and grid and everything, mm-hmm. but it's a 3x3 grid. So nine grids total, thus the immaculate grid. And what happens is you'll have a few boxes where it's players that played for a couple of teams. And then you have to fill out other boxes where it's like player who, you know, filled
some
out this
award or achievement. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It has been awesome. It has been very challenging. It has been frustrating at moments. I did not, spoiler for those who haven't done it already, which would be very surprising, but I missed Scott Rolen for the one that we were doing today.
Yep.
And I was just like, and then Ryan Ludwig is a guy I should have gotten. Edgar Renteria. You got Rolen, right?
I got Rolen. Yes, I got Rolen. I got Sidney Ponson for the Cardinals and Orioles.
That was a great pull. I didn't know that he played for the Cardinals at all. I mean, if you had him, Goo and Mac had him, I was like, what the fuck? Like,
He's the Caribbean Haas. I loved Sidney Ponson, but it was what threw me is Griffey. I didn't know Griffey ever played for the White Sox.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That is. Yeah. Well, the most mind-blowing one, though, Goo had a great grid, but he just totally butchered the 200 hit club for mm-hmm. it all. I was like, this is – like, I understand the Barry Larkin hiccup, but did you run into that too?
I did that, and I did Johnny Bench too. Like, what a dumb choice. Like, big red machine. It was just dumb.
Yeah, it is really tough though. I mean, like, I had Edwin Jackson, and everybody knows like he's one of the cheat codes for this. He's mm-hmm. like 14 teams. I had my pitching coach for one of them because I knew I didn't have to think about that one too much. But yeah, it is surprisingly challenging, and it is surprisingly frustrating. The other ones, I'm not gonna play the football one probably, but the basketball one has some ways to go. The interface it seems kind mm-hmm. of dodgy. Like Billy played Ben Wallace, who I didn't finish the grid because I was having so much trouble with it. But Billy played Ben Wallace, and I think he wasn't able to the grid wasn't recognizing it originally.
Yeah. My friend sent me a video of the same thing with like trying to use Danilo Gallinari one time, and it was like when it wasn't letting him or giving him a wrong answer.
Yeah, the first day when I did it was
perfect.
Nothing. It'll get there. But the first day it's not from the same people that made the Immaculate mm-hmm. Grid. I will say appreciate they didn't use the same name because that would have been really like the Immaculate Grid and then just make it like basketball. I was like that's not cool.
No, crossover makes sense. Crossover grid works.
But the first day that I did it, Wes, it was not registering my correct guesses. So basically, I had infinite guesses.
That was something that was happening to me as well. Yeah, yeah. You just keep going. Yep.
So I really only got an 8 out of 9 on my first one, but then I just kept guessing random ones. I got Al Harrington for Pacers Nuggets as my Hail Mary. Mm-hmm, I didn't know that one, but
well, he's a cheek. He's played on a bunch of teams too.
Has he? I know Hawks, Pacers, and. I want to say, and then Nuggets, obviously, that's the other one. So
I feel like he played on the Wizards.
He might have. That might be the right call. Yeah. But I today's was tough, like to the point where like I actually haven't finished it. I just did three, and then I was like, I need to walk away because I have no fucking clue with some of these teams. There's no stats on that one either, so we need to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So anyways, so I would have talked about that too. I did just want to note, though, that I did rent for free from the library Tolkien. Ooh. Finally getting like correct pronunciation on his name. I think I always called him Tolkien, but it's Tolkien is how they make a whole point of it in the movie. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a big Lord of the Rings fan, this is something that you will enjoy just getting to learn a little bit more about the character. Not like the greatest movie ever made by any stretch, very niche too. When you're talking about like a biopic. But yeah, like I think if you're a big Lord of the Rings fan, it'll be very interesting to learn some of the nuggets we get from Tolkien in this movie.
All right. I like it. I've only watched an episode or two of season two, but I might be in on the bear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It looks very interesting. All the side characters of the family, it's shot really interesting. I think I got sucked in. The wife's been watching, so I might have to go back and start from the beginning there. Cause it looks good.
What is that on again? Is it Hulu?
Hulu, FXX. Yeah. All that.
Oh, okay. Yep. FXX. You can't sleep on FXX.
No. They're just 1X away from
ooh,
maybe doing a little bit more than sleep, you know?
Oh, boy.
You know what I mean?
Mm. All right. Well,
yeah, that's a good place to end it.
Yeah, let's get quickly to this week in the DSG. So for hashtag Dork, they are not doing a new episode. They're actually doing a release of a YouTube special that's never been released on their audio channel. The only reason I know all this is because I was featured in it. It's the top 10 horror comics, top 10 hashtag dork horror comics. I think we will do a TLDR one a little bit later this year. But Doc
did you
and I
fill out your TV show list there that they're doing?
I have not finished it. I've started the list making process of it, but I have not finished it. Have you?
Yes, I've just done. I did a one quick run through of it. So, well, what do you think my number one show is? I'll tell you.
I do want to know your number one show is not The Wire. It's not Game of Thrones. It's not
The Wire's close.
It's The Office.
No, The Wire's number two. The Office is number six.
Ah, okay, all right. So I'm in the realm.
You're right there, SportsCenter.
Oh wow, okay. All right.
The way I'm thinking about it is like time logged watching it.
That's fair.
A lot of turnover, a lot of good turnover, a lot of good cast members there.
A lot of bad, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, how often like would you watch SportsCenter and then also for me, Baseball Tonight, just on repeat, like over and over and over again?
100%. No, that is fair.
And I think that kind of goes into like some of the things like The Office or some of the streaming shows. That you may watch because it's like time logged with the show.
It's
SportsCenter.
It's an interesting point because I was wondering if like because like isn't Sunday Night Football like the highest? I don't know, like the
football,
the highest rated shows. It's like, but it's not a show; it's sport. It's different. So like, SportsCenter is also different. Mm-hmm. So you make a fair point. I don't think I'm going to include it on my list because I just don't like. To me, show is well. I might include a reality show on my list. So I don't know if you can count scripted, but
see, I have a bunch of reality shows on there. Yeah,
I might only have one.
Also, my top 20 coming at number 19, NFL Red Zone.
See, that's where I was going.
That's genius.
When that's a genius
invention.
When you said SportsCenter, I was like, okay, well, what about NFL Red Zone? But at the same time, it's like those are games, so like I could see how someone would say no, but yeah.
But it's one show that's on once a week that like it's the best show ever. It's just highlights.
It's live action of it, the Red Zone. It's all of it.
But it's just highlights though. That's it.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm gonna put those on there. Like
I'm just, it's my list.
Yeah. I know, but I'm like it's so okay. You know what? Actually, I'm stalling trying to figure out what the hell I wanted to ask you. So did you take this as the best objectively or your favorite?
No, that's like impossible. Like that's such a like in my opinion, I think that's a dumb way to look at it because I haven't seen every show. So how can I objectively say that? Like then I'm just going off of like, all right, well, what does IMDb say? Then I'm just going to be regurgitating their list or what's Rotten Tomatoes. You know what I mean? So these are
100%
the shows that I've watched. Like, great. Like Cheers is fun. You know, The Sopranos is a great show. I never watched it. Like I can't rate something I haven't watched.
That's something we should try to account for. It's only going to make the math harder for Keith, but like in general, like when we don't rate something over time, if like enough people vote on it, figuring out maybe a different system, maybe I guess just averaging it out. But
again, it should just be wording it differently. It should be the DSG's top favorite or favorite 50 shows of all time.
Well, I don't care. It's not so much about the best. It's just like I that's fine. Like that's fine if we want.
But that's what I mean. You bring up the question there. It's like, well, what's the best? What does that mean?
Oh yes, yeah. No, I think when we did the comic book movies, I did factor in like objectively good and then like or objective like quality or whatever, and then also like which I preferred. Mm-hmm. Thus, quite a few animation movies, but. I had a feeling that's how you felt on it too. So it's
For some reason, like shows feel more personal. I don't know, like more subjective than movies. I don't know if that translates, but
I think that's fair. I do. There's a whole thing of like, you know, with TVs, like they're welcoming them into your home. So it's a whole different
experience. I don't know. Yeah. So that's why
time, all that stuff. Mm-hmm, so you had Seinfeld on your list, right?
Yeah. Seinfeld is 14.
Okay, nice. See, I haven't watched Curb. Like, maybe I've watched a few minutes of it, so I'm not going to have that, and I'm going to feel like feel like I would really enjoy it if I watched it.
Curb is very high, but I'm actually seeing her. I left out Veep. Veep should have been on here.
Did you already turn in the list?
Yeah, or turned it in. Sheet of Integrity, so that's it is what it is.
I screwed up last time and put it in one too many times, and it pissed off Rich. So, yeah, I'm like, that's why I'm taking my time. You gave us a date to turn it in.
Yeah.
leave it alone. But anyways, what was I going to say? As what else we got? So for Mac and Goon, they did something called movies released on the same day. I think it's supposed to be a Barbie Oppenheimer kind of situation.
Oh, okay, cool.
TLDR, I mentioned earlier, we're just doing what's new this week. PCP, they are still not doing podcasts. I've heard it both ways. Is up for season six, episode four, I believe. I don't know if they did an episode last week. I forgot to update things here, but. Anyways, and then the streamers, you can find Doc on Twitch at Backrack of Shime, at Shime Time on Twitch, and you can find the hashtag Dork Boys playing their video games on their YouTube page. And I was correct for the people who are fans of the Pineapple Boys, episode 4 of season 6 this week.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, and next week we'll figure out what we're doing. We might actually take a week off next week.
Okay. Sounds
right. I feel like that might make sense. We're going to have our hands full over the weekend and all that, right? Is that lining up, or is that the weekend after?
That's the weekend after.
Okay, so
yes,
TBD next week, but TBD. The weekend after we might, might take a week off.
I think that is the right move. But we will convene after this. But so I don't know what to say for sign off.
It'll be at the same bad time, same bad place as always.